వాసుదేవాయం.
ఓం నమో భగవదే వాసుదేవాయం.
We were discussing last Sunday the Lunar Dynasty in the ninth canto. As I said before, that the interesting part of this ninth canto is that all the great kings and emperors who came in this Lunar Dynasty, beginning with the moon, although the dynasty started with some difficulty because of the problem moon has created with Brihaspati, but since then this dynasty, or Chandravamsham or Somavamsham as it's called, has created such great personalities, and that is precisely the reason why Krishna has appeared in that dynasty. That Edorvamsham Narashutval Sarvabhavai Pramuchyade. Bhagavatam says, if you just mention the names of the great personalities who appeared in this dynasty, or the Chandravamsham or Somavamsham, that alone will remove all the reactions of sinful activities. Sarvabhavai Pramuchyade. All the sinful activities will be wiped out, it says. So powerful and so great is this race, this dynasty, or Chandravamsham or Somavamsham. Yador Vamsham Narashrutval Sarvabhavai Pramuchyade. That is what Srimad Bhagavatam says about the glory of this Somavamsham. So in this Somavamsham, we were discussing last Sunday, the last personality we discussed was Yayati. Yayati was the Yayati had these five children who had got entangled with Sharmishta and Devayani, the two marriages, and from that Idum Chaturvasum Chaiva Devayani Vyajayada Druhyum Chanum Japurunja Sharmishta Varshavaruvani. Srimad Bhagavatam says in a very, very joking manner, the way Sri Shukan says about this is that Yadush Chaturvasum Chaivam, Yadu and Turvasu, two children were born for Devayani. Druhyam Chanim Japurunjam, Druhyu Anadruhyu and Puru, Sharmishta Varshavarvani. Varshavarvani, Vishavarvav's daughter Sharmishta had these three children from Yadu. So Sri Shukan has mentioned that. And that is what we spoke about last Sunday. That is the last king in that, up to that point of Yayadi. From now, that means Yayadi had Yadu, Turvasu, and then Druhyu, Yadu and Turvasu from Devayani, and Druhyu, Anadruhyu and Puru from from Sharmishta. Now, as I mentioned before, that Yadu did not want to accept the old age from Yayadi and hand over the youth to him, because Yadu knew what was life meant for. Perhaps if you look at Srimad Bhagavatam very closely, you will notice one thing, that this Yadu comes back again in the Ekadasha Skandam later, in the 11th canto. And there Krishna brings him, that, and Krishna refers to Yadu while speaking to Uddhava. He was our great ancestor, Yadu Maharaj. When he was travelling in the forest, he met with the Atreya Rishi, or the Atreya Maharshi, with whom there is a very serious spiritual discussion. And that is one of the major topics in the 11th canto. So you could probably say that Krishna was aware that this Yadu Maharaj, who was the eldest of the family, eldest among the Yayati's children, had a great role to play. And accordingly, Yadu's attitude towards material life was such from the very beginning that he decided that he was going to give up material activities and prepare himself for going back to the spiritual world. So this is the great quality of Yadu. And because Krishna appeared in this dynasty of Yadu, he is called as Yadava. The name Yadava came to Krishna. Yadavaya Madhavaya Keshavaya Namaha. So where this Yadavaya came from, this Yadu's dynasty. So Krishna was born in that, and Krishna also took up this name as Yadava because of taking birth in the Yadu's family. So if you look, as I mentioned before, all the great personalities, Pururavas and also Yayati and so many other great kings till now have all been very, very serious about their material life as well. In other words, they were enjoying their material life to the such an extent. But the good thing about them is that at some point in time, they stopped everything and understood that this material life is not to be wasted in material activities. They prepared themselves and went back to the spiritual world. So the difference is that they have realized at some point in life that they have to give it up, that this material life will not get you anywhere. At the end, all materialistic activities ends up in frustration. And also, materialistic activities cannot satisfy the demand or the desires of the soul. A living entity by nature is spiritual, and spiritual activities are necessary. As long as one is identifying with the body, materialistic life is sufficient. But then the body will drop off one day anyhow. So all along with the drop, along with the body dropping off, along with the death of the body, all the so-called acquisitions of the material world and material happiness also drops off. That is the end of the whole career of the material life. So therefore, the great sages and the great personalities, the great kings in this Lunar dynasty, were conscious when they were dealing with material nature. In other words, some point in time, they were able to come to their senses. And they have, it is very unusual thing that the kings to act so much in a materialistic way, like the way Yayati has done, or Pururavas has done. They're great, great emperors, but at the same time, enjoying material life. But one point, they also stopped it and realized the value of human life and took advantage of it and gone back to spiritual world. This is the greatest thing what we have to learn from the ninth canto. This ninth canto, on the other hand, is a list of names. Constantly, Sukadeva Goswami is talking to Parikshit, one after the other, name after name, he is giving there. And he will not mention in detail about everybody, because there wasn't enough time to talk about it. Vaktam Varshashadeiravi, he says there, that Sukadeva Goswami says, if I had to talk about this Chandravamsham, he says it will take hundreds of years to talk about it. So he has been very, very selective. The Sukadeva Goswami has selected only the important personalities whom he felt may give some indication to Parikshit Maharaj about their activities. So after that, after Yayati's time, then we start from Puru again. Puru is the youngest of all the Yayati's children. And it is Puru who accepted the old age in exchange of his youth with Yayati. Can you imagine? Yayati's desires, material enjoyment desire was such that he is saying to his youngest son, I'll hand over my old age to you. Give me your youth to me. And so that I can enjoy my life with your mother. This is what basically it is all about. That he wanted to enjoy the lifetime with Sharmishtha and Devayani for a longer period of time. So he's saying to his own children that you take my old age. And at one point, Yayati also came to his senses. He thought, what a kind of mentality I have developed. What kind of thoughts have come to me that in order to enjoy or to have sense gratification, he is even willing, he thought himself, that I was even willing to hand over my old age to my youngest son and take his youth so that I could enjoy with their mother and live my happy life in material world. And when Yayati thought about all these things, ultimately Yayati came to his senses. And that is when, that it says in the Bhagavatam, Jatabhakshamivadvija, that they decided to, when that's the very moment the thought came to him, that this is not how one should execute their life in this world, he decided to leave. And at that time, both these two, the wings of the bird, as Sri Shukan says there, what is this? One is the knowledge side of it, and the renunciation side of it. Both of them, those two wings have grown for him. In other words, he came to his understanding that renunciation knowledge has really helped him to give up the seriousness of spiritual life and taking to spiritual life seriously. So he decided to go to the forest. Devayani and Sharmishtha also realized that what was going on till now in their life was not proper. So they also accompanied the king to the forest. And it says in the Bhagavatam that meditating on Krishna, it specifically mentions the word Krishna there. Krishna, meditating on Krishna, they gave up their body and then finished their earthly pastimes or earthly activities. So this story in the ninth canto, Namaskandam, is complete, full of these kind of stories from the great emperors and kings who have driven us in different understanding also from these great personalities. So after this story finishes there. It begins now with Puru again. Puru onwards, right up to Shantanu. That is the next one or two chapters. So I just thought I'll mention this before I read those chapters. And after reading that, we have another two interesting personalities in the ninth canto. And one is Rantideva, who is another teacher for us to learn so many things from Rantideva. And the other one is King Bharata, the son of Dushyanta. So Bharata taught us a lot of things. And Rantideva also taught us many, many things. So before I go into that story in detail, I'll just read those chapters and then we'll explain that.
Shuka uvacham puror vamsham pravakshyami yatra jatosi bharata yatra ajarshayo vamsha brahma vamshascha jajnirem janame jayoshabul puro prajinvam stalsudastada praviroda namasurvai tasma charupado bhaval tasyu sudyarabul putras tasmal bahugavastada samyadi stasya ham tasya aham yadi yaudra shradra shastalsudaspradaha ഹൃദയുസ്തസ്യ ഉക്ഷേയു സ്തണ്ടിലേയു കൃതേയുക ജലേയു സന്തതേയുശ്ച ധർമ്മ സത്യവ്രതേയവാം ദശൈതേ അപ്സരസ പുത്രാവനേയുശ്ചാവമസ്മൃത ഗൃഹാച്ഛാമിന്ദ്രിയാണിവ മുഖ്യസ്യ ജഗദാത്മന ഹൃദയോരന്തിഭാരോമുൽ ത്രയസ്തസ്യാത്മജാ നൃപ സുമതിർധ്രുവോ പ്രതിരഥ കണ്ണോ പ്രതിരഥാത്മജാം തസ്യ മേധാതിസ്തസ്മാൽ പ്രസ്കന്നദ്വാദ്വിജാദയ പുത്രോബുൽ സുമതേരൈഭ്യോ ദുഷ്യന്ത സ്ഥൽസുതോഭഗാം ദുഷ്യന്തോ മൃഗയാം യാത കണ്വാശ്രമപദം ഗത തത്രാസീനം സ്വപ്രഭയ മണ്ഡയന്തീം രമാവിവാം വിലോക്യ സദ്യോ മമുഹേ ദേവമായാമിവ സ്ത്രിയം ബഭാഷേതാം വരാരോഹാം ഭടൈ കതിപയൈർവൃത തദ്ദർശന പ്രമുദിത സംനിവൃത്ത പരിശ്രമ പപ്രച്ഛ കാമസന്തപ്ത പ്രഹസൻ ശ്ലക്ഷ്ണയാഗിരാം കാത്വം കമലപത്രാക്ഷി കസ്യാസി ഹൃദയംഗമേ കിം വാ ചികീർഷിതീം ത്വത്ര ഭവത്യാ നിർജനേ വനേ വ്യക്തം രാജന്യതനയാം വേദ്മ്യഹം ത്വാം സുമധ്യമേ നഹി ചേത പൗരവാണാമധർമ്മേ രമതേ ക്വചിൽ ശകുന്തളോ വാചാം വിശ്വാമിത്രാത്മജൈവാഹം ത്യക്താമേന ഗയാവനേ വേദൈത ഭഗവാൻ കണ്ണു വീരകിം കരവാമദേം ആസ്യതാം അരവിന്ദാക്ഷ ഗൃഹ്യതാമർഹണം ചന ബുജ്യതാം സന്ധി നീവാരാം ഉഷ്യതാം യതിരോചതേം ദുഷ്യന്തവാചാം ഉപമന്നമിതം സുബ്രുജാതായ കുശികാന്വയേ സ്വയം ഹി വൃണുതേ രാജ്ഞാം കന്യകാസദൃശം വരം ഓമിത്യുക്തേ യഥാധർമ്മ ഉപയേമേ ശകുന്തളാം ഗാന്ധർവവിധിനാ രാജ ദേശകാലവിധാനവിൽ അമോഘവീര്യോ രാജർഷി മഹേഷ്യാം വീര്യമാധതേ ശോഭൂതേ സ്വപുരം യാത കാലീനാസൂദനാസുതം കണ്ണകുമാരസ്യവനേ ചക്രേ സമുചിതാക്രിയ ബദ്ധ്വാ മൃഗേന്ദ്രാം സ്തരസാ ക്രീഡതി സ്മ സബാലകാം തം ദുരത്തെ വിക്രാന്തമാദായ പ്രമദോത്തമ ഹരേരംശാംശ സമ്പൂതം ഭർത്തുരന്തികമാഗമൽ യഥാ നിജഗൃഹേ രാജ ഭാര്യാപുത്രാവനിന്ദിതോ ശൃണ്വതാം സർവഭൂതാനാം ഖേവാഗാഹ ശരീരിണി മാതാഭസ്ത്രാവിദു പുത്രോ ഭയേന ജാതസ ഏവ സ ഭരസ്വപുത്രം ദുഷ്യന്തമാവമംസ്താം ശകുന്തളം രേധോദാ പുത്രോ നൈതി നരദേവയമക്ഷയാൽ ത്വം ചാസ്യധാതാ ഗർഭസ്യാം സത്യമാഹ ശകുന്തളം പിതരുപരദേശോഭി ചക്രവർത്തി മഹായശാം മഹിമാഗീയദേതസ്യ ഹരേരംശഭുവോ ഭുവി ചക്രം ദക്ഷിണഹസ്തേസ്യ പത്മകോശോസ്യ പാദയോ ഈജേ മഹാഭിഷേകേണ സ്വഭിഷിക്തോധുരാധിഭും പഞ്ച പഞ്ചാശതാമേദ്യർ ഗംഗായാമനുവാജിബി മാമദേയം പുരോധായ മുനായാമനു പ്രഭൂം അഷ്ടസപ്തതി മേധ്യാശ്വാൻ ഭവന്ത പ്രദദൽ വസു രേതസഹിതൗഷ്യന്തേർ അഗ്നിസാജീ ഗുണേശിത സഹസ്രം വദ്വശോ യസ്മിൻ ബ്രാഹ്മണാഗാ വിഭേജിരേ ത്രയസ്ത്രിംശച്ചതം ഹ്രശ്വാൻ ബുദ്ധ്വാ വിസ്മാവയൻ നൃപാൻ ദൗഷ്യന്തിരത്യാഗാൻമായം ദേവാനാം ഗുരുമായയോ മൃഗാൻ ശുക്ലതേ കൃഷ്ണൻ ഹിരണ്യേന പരിവ്രതാൻ അദാൽക്കർമ്മണി വഷ്ണാരേ നീതാനി ചതുർദശാം ഭരതസ്യ മഹൽ കർമ്മം നപൂർവേ നാപരേ നൃപ നൈവാപൂർണൈവ പ്രാപ്സ്യന്തി ബാഹുഭ്യാം ത്രിവിധം യഥാം കിരാതഹോണാൻ യവനാനാന്ധ്രാൻ കങ്കാൻ ഖഷാൻ ശകാൻ അബ്രാഹ്മണ്യാ നൃപാംശ്ചാഹൻ മ്ലേച്ഛാൻ ദിഗ്വിജയേഖിലാൻ ജിത്വാ പുരാസുരാദേവാൻ ഏരസൗകാംസി ഭേജിരെ ദേവസ്ത്രിയോരസാം നീത പ്രാണിഭീ പുനരാഹരാൽ സർവകാമാൻ ദുദുഹതു പ്രജാനാം ദസ്യ രോദസി സമാസ്ത്രണവസാഹസ്യർ ദിക്ഷു ചക്രമവർത്തയൽ സസമ്രാൻ ലോകബാലാഖ്യം ഐശ്വര്യമധിരാശ്രയം ചക്രം ജാസ്ഖലിതം പ്രാണൻ മുഷേത്യപരരാമഹ തസ്യാസന്ദർഭവൈദർഭ്യ പത്നിസ്ത്രീ സുസമ്മത ജഗ്നിസ്ത്യാഗമയാൽ പുത്രാൻ നാനുരൂപമിതീരിതേം തസ്യൈവം വിധദേവം ശേ തദർത്ഥം യജതസ്തുതം മരുൽ സ്തോമേന മരുതോ ഭരദ്വാജമുപാദതോം അന്തർവത്ന്യം ഭ്രാതൃവത്ന്യം മൈഥുനായ ബൃഹസ്പതി പ്രവൃത്തോ വാരിതോ ഗർഭം ശപ്ത്വാ വീര്യമവാസ്രജൽ തം ത്യക്തുകാമാം മമതാം ഭർത്തൃത്യാഗ വിഷംഗിതാം നാമ നിർവചനം തസ്യാ ശ്ലോകമേനം സുരാജഹു മൂഢേ ഭരദ്വാജമിമം ഭരദ്വാജം ബൃഹസ്പതേ യാദോ യദുക്ത്വാ പിതരോ ഭരദ്വാജ ഭരദ്വാജസ്തത സ്വയം ചോദ്യമാനാ സുരേരൈവം മത്വാ വിധദാത്മജം വിസൃജൻ മരുതോ ബിഭ്രൻ ദത്തോയം വിധതേന്വയേ ശ്രീമത്ഭാഗവതേ നാമേ വിംശതമോദ്ധ്യായ സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദ നാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ ബിഗിനിങ് ഫ്രം Puru now. Puru, as I said before, that exchanged his youth with Ayati and Puru exchanged his youth with Ayati and from this chapter onwards it is Puru's descendants. That is what is discussed here. So there are so many kings mentioned there, and then it comes to the particular king who is well known. He is Dushyanta. He is also called as Dushmanda, but Dushyanta is also mentioned in the Bhagavatam. In different Bhagavatam versions you will find a slight difference of the name Dushyanta. So this Dushyanta is very favorite for all the poets and the authors. They like him very much because his story is so interesting, Dushyanta's story. And there are many, many people, even the great poet Kalidas, he wrote Shakuntalam, and that is the whole story is about Shakuntala and Dushyanta. That story comes there as well. So all the great poets and people who are involved in the literature, they all take great pleasure in the story of this Dushyanta, this King Dushyanta. So Dushyanta was a great powerful personality. One day he went into the forest to hunt. So while hunting, suddenly he saw a young girl sitting there near an ashram, not knowing who she is and why she was sitting there. Dushyanta somehow got prompted to go and ask her who she was and what she was doing there and her background, everything he wanted to know from her. So when he went to see her, Shakuntala, that was her name, Shakuntala told Dushyanta that my father is Vishwamitra Maharshi and mother is Menaka. After I was born, Menaka left me here in the forest and went back to the heavenly planets. But the Shakunda birds brought me up here, and when later on when Kannu Maharshi saw me, he brought me to this ashram. And I am now living with Kannu Maharshi, but actually I am the daughter of Vishwamitra Maharshi. That is what Shakuntala revealed her identity to Dushyanta. Dushyanta saw how beautiful she was. After all, Shakuntala is the daughter of Menaka. Menaka is a woman from the heavenly planets. So naturally you can understand that the beauty of Menaka was such that Dushyanta was very much captivated by her beauty. And he wanted to marry her. The desire came up in his heart to marry him, marry her. It's like a Kshatriya king had all the controls and authority at that time. So in this situation, why Shakuntala was left behind? That is another story, because Vishwamitra, when he started his penances in the forest, actually Indra is always keeping an eye on all these great sages. As soon as they start something, some serious effort, performing serious austerities and penances,
he has exclusively kept a group of people in the heavenly planets. Just for only one business they have. That is, as soon as they have started these austerities, he will send them here to stop it. And they'll come sing and dance and somehow or the other disturb his mind. And they are so beautiful and they can sing very well and they can dance very well. Majority of our so-called sages will fall down also. And they will fall and then they will realize that what has happened to me. I have performed so many years of severe austerities and penances. But at the end, it ends up like this. And as soon as the business is over, and they will go back to the heavenly planets also. So this is Indra's job. Indra is always very much alert about this. And so Indra sometimes sends Ramba, sometimes sends Menaka, sometimes Tilottama, sometimes Urvashi. Depending on, I think there is a rotor system there. However it works, I don't know what the system is. But there is a system, definitely. Because in the Bhagavatam you will find at different instances, different personalities coming. If it is a very difficult person, Urvashi comes herself. But if it is not so difficult, I think Indra goes and discusses the problem with the person involved, and then they make the decision who should come. But one thing you must remember, that they have a very, very difficult job, because these the beautiful women from the heavenly planets, when they take up this assignment, it's a real MI5 job. Big risk is involved in that. Because when they come here, and if they did not succeed in their effort, and by chance the sage cursed them, if he, the sage says to them, you stay there as a stone for 50,000 years, they just have no option. So they have to stay here. So there's a big chance they are taking. But still, to please Indra, that's their responsibility. They are willing to come here and do whatever Indra wants them to do. So Indra discusses everything with them. So Indra discusses this issue with Menaka, seeing Vishwamitra's effort, endeavor to acquire strength through spiritual strength. So Vishwamitra, because Indra's fear is always that, is he wants to take away my job, my throne? That's a fear in his mind. Always he has got that fear. Then, and so Vishwamitra, he wanted to stop that, so he sent Menaka here. Menaka came here, and Vishwamitra, listen, also this is another interesting thing, is Vishwamitra was very fully focused on his yoga system, whatever that yoga practice he was following. But in that yoga system also, he could not control his mind. And the result was, what was the result? Result was, Shakuntala was born. That was the result. So when Menaka came, that sometimes devotees also pray to Krishna, that if I could hear the sound of the anklets of Krishna's lotus feet, that is something very auspicious to hear. If one could hear, many devotees pray to Krishna like that. But Vishwamitra also wanted to hear. Only thing is, it was not from Krishna's lotus feet, it was from Menaka's feet that he heard these anklets, and which he woke up from his samadhi. So with a great difficulty, they get to the samadhi state. And from samadhi state, they fall down. Why do they fall down? Because Enyeravindaksha vimuktamanina toyalmabhava avishuddha buddhaya arukshya krishrena param padam padam padandino yadya ushpadhangraya. Brahma's prayers you can see in the Shrimad Bhagavatam. Brahma says that these people who take to this process of yoga system of Ashtanga Yoga and others, after a while they start thinking that I am already liberated now. I come to the samadhi state. There is no chance of me falling down again into maya. This is their thinking. So with that consciousness, they try. Vimuktamaninam, they're already thinking, whether it is jnani or whether it is a yogi, Ashtanga Yogi, that doesn't matter. Both of them think in the same way. So they are saying that we'll get liberated, we are already liberated, we are nothing to fear about. And then this happens to them. Avishuddha buddhayaha. Avishuddha buddhi, that means their intelligence is not purified. Aruhya krichrena param padam padam. That they will not able to go up again anymore, elevate themselves, and they will fall. Because of this, why? There is no Krishna consciousness there. This is the reason behind it. Unless and until one is sheltered by Krishna, all the other so-called yoga system at some point or the other is bound to fall. And that is why Srimad Bhagavatam says, Brahma, Lord Brahma says this, while glorifying Krishna. Without your mercy and your shelter, all my so-called effort in spiritual life will go in vain. That is what he was trying to point out in that glorious prayers to Krishna. So same thing, Vishwamitra also fell down at that situation. So Menaka, after the business was over, she went back, left the child here, told Vishwamitra, if you want to look after the baby, here you have. And she went back. And baby is lying there, Shakuntala was lying there. Kannu Maharshi saw her, brought her to the ashram. And in the meanwhile, Kannu Maharshi brought her up. Shakuntala was brought up by Kannu Maharshi. Kannu Maharshi was a very powerful sage. Among the sages, he's a great personality. And this Kannu Maharshi brought her up. And it was that particular day when Dushyanta arrived in the forest, Kannu Maharshi wasn't there. He was away somewhere. And Shakuntala was sitting there, and Dushyanta met Shakuntala. And they had a conversation with each other. Shakuntala invited Dushyanta, knowing well that he is the king and she is a Kshatriya girl. So she invited the Kshatriya king to the ashram. He went there and she invited him to stay there for a few days. And he agreed, accepted the invitation and stayed there. She offered him food, everything, and looked after him also. And they decided, according to their own desire, both of them had the desire to get marry each other. And that is known as Gandharva Vidhi. Gandharva Vidhi means Gandharvas marry like this. Gandharva system is like that. That is, therefore, this type of marriage is called as Gandharvam. There are different kinds of marriages, but Gandharva Vidhi is the Gandharva system of marriage. No discussion with others, among themselves mutually agreed, and they married them. Later on, Kannu Maharshi came back. When Kannu Maharshi came back, he came to know all what has happened. He was very pleased that Shakuntala has been married to the king. So Kannu Maharshi was thinking, what a responsibility I have to bring her up, because as a sage, he felt that he should offer her in marriage to somebody. So now that the marriage is over, Kannu Maharshi extremely satisfied with that. Dushyanta told Shakuntala that I'm going back to the palace and I'll come back later and take you back. So he had to arrange everything in the palace also, because there were so many other queens who were married to him. So these powerful Kshatriya kings, they had that way of doing things. So he promised Shakuntala that he will come back. And he went away. But by now, Shakuntala was pregnant. Shakuntala was pregnant. After some time, Dushyanta didn't come back. And Shakuntala was in a little bit of anxiety about it. Why Dushyanta hasn't come back? And in due course, Shakuntala had the baby also. This baby was born. His name is Bharata. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, we have three Bharatas. One Bharata is this Bharata, who was born from Shakuntala, a son of Dushyanta. There is another Bharata, Lord Ramchandra's brother. And there is a third Bharata, who is the eldest son of Maharaj Rishabhadev. So, Bharata Varsham, as it was known for all along, that name Bharata Varsham came from the son of the great personality Rishabhadev. It was from that Bharata Varsham the name has come. Not from the Lord Ramchandra's brother Bharata or this Bharata who was born as the son of Shakuntala. Even though this Bharata also is a very, very interesting person. You have to see, in fact, at the time of birth itself, when Shakuntala looked at his feet, she could see that he was somebody very special, very auspicious birth. On the feet alone, there was the marks of the lotus flower and few other things as well, which were related to some auspicious birth. Not knowing who he is, she brought him up. So in a few years' time, this boy, 4 years or 5 years, something like that, he had some special habits which you have never seen before anywhere else. He'll go to the forest, catch hold of some cubs, small lions, bring them home. And like children play with the cats, he used to do with the cubs. And then when the mother comes, mother of these cubs, when they come there, he'll take a stick and beat them up and send them away. 5-year-old boy, can you imagine the courage of that child? That this was Bharata. And Everyone knew at that time that he is going to be a very special person, this Bharata. And when you look at this here, in the verse itself, you can see Sukadeva Goswami is addressing Parikshit Maharaj. Purorvamsham pravakshyami yatra jadosi Bharata. He is addressing Parikshit. Because you are born in that race of Bharata, King Bharata, he is calling him as Bharata. In this verse itself, in other words, showing him that your relationship with that personality, with Bharata, is such. So, this Bharata, who used to play like this with the lions all the time, lions were his pets. He used to keep lions as his pets. He'll go and bring few of them and play with them. And if any of them misbehaves, he'll beat them up and send them back to the forest again when the mother comes. So this way he showed who he is from the early days itself. So from the palace, no invitation came. Nobody came to take Shakuntala back to the palace. So after a while, Kannu Maharshi decided that it is not proper that Bharata has to grow up like this in this ashram. Rather, he is entitled for a throne of Dushyanta's son. That it is not proper that Bharata has to grow up like this in this ashram. Rather, he is entitled for a throne of Dushyanta's son. And he should be going back to this. So he sent a message to Dushyanta. And then later on, Shakuntala went back with Bharata to see Dushyanta. This is the fun, the whole fun. So many stories in the Bhagavatam. But there is not one story like this. Why so it's interesting is, that Shakuntala and Bharata came to Dushyanta's palace. And Shakuntala mentioned to Bharata that why have you not come to take me back? Because we were married before. Dushyanta says, I have not been married. I don't know you. I have not even heard about you. I don't remember anything like that. He said to Shakuntala. And what can you do? You got married after 15-20 years. Husband is saying to the wife, I can't remember that we ever got married. So what do you do then? Apparently, it is from that day onwards, this thing called registering the marriage started. Can you imagine? Because it is a very funny thing that if you have to register a marriage, a man is getting married to a woman, and if they know each other, and if the marriage is working out successfully, what is the need of a registration? This registration business apparently started from the day Dushyanta and Shakuntala had a problem between each other. Dushyanta says, I don't remember that I married you. This is saying after 5-6 years, come with the son, who is Dushyanta's son, she is holding his hand. And Dushyanta is saying to Shakuntala, I can't remember marrying you, he says. So you can see from here how different things came to the society in due course. Now, everything you need paper today, isn't it? Without paper, nothing works in this world. Paper is the document that keeps us all in this material world. I think we will have such a big record of things, starting from driving license and this, that, everything, passport and so on and so forth, a number of documents. And when you die, you can put all these things along with your body into the graveyard and burn it. That's what it's worth for. But just to spend 50-60 years in this world, so many documents you have to carry with you. And they keep increasing, it never decreases. It only increases. You have this card, that card, and so many identity cards, so many things anyway. So marriage certificate started from that day, it seems. So Dushyanta said, no, I don't know. It was then that from the sky there was a few words were spoken. Dushyanta, Shakuntala is your wife. You have married her. Please accept her. Don't give any trouble to Shakuntala. This was the words that were spoken. So when these words were spoken, Dushyanta, suddenly the memory came back to him and accepted Shakuntala. It is Krishna's unknown factors behind all these things. Krishna's another incarnation is this Bharata. He is not Amsha Amsham. In other words, he is the partial expansion of a partial expansion is Bharata. So Bharata grew up and he became the emperor. There also some problem. Now, in the history, you will never find a king like this Bharata. Why? Because he was so serious in his life. never joked with anybody. Always extremely serious. Never smiles, never jokes with anyone. So you can imagine, a Kshatriya in its pure form was there, present there. And these Kshatriya kings, they have this nature that when they become serious about something, nothing can stop them from doing what they want. So this is that Kshatriya blood in him. So our Bharata Maharaj, when he became the king, in the meanwhile, Dushyanta, after a while, as I said before, gave up his earthly activities, went back to the forest, performed spiritual activities, and went back to spiritual world. But Bharata Maharaj took over the administration, and Bharata became one very predominating personality in this race. And that is why Parikshit was addressed as Bharata. So what did Bharata do? After Bharata, this race came to an extinction. Lunar race came to an extinction. Why? Why did he get extinct? Because, not that Bharata didn't get married. Not one, three times he got married. Three girls he married. All from the daughters of Vidarbha. Vidarbha king's daughters. He married all three of them. And from all three of them, he had a son each. So he had three sons as well. In spite of that, the family came into extinction. And there was no king after his time. This situation happened. How did it happen? That's also, Bhagavatam is very nicely puts it, all these things together. And when you see, read through Srimad Bhagavatam, you'll find that kind of things that this Bharat Maharaj has done. Bharat said one day, some idea came to his mind that I don't have any humor, he thought himself. Maybe I should joke with people sometimes. He just thought like that in his mind. Because he was so grave and serious, even the wives were very afraid of him. Unless it was absolutely necessary, they were always kept at distance and be a little bit careful while speaking to him or dealing with him. Because he was so grave and so serious about everything, never smiled or never joked with any of the wives. But someday, one day he got this understanding that he should joke with the wives. So he suddenly called all of them there one day. And he said to them, I'm going to joke with you, he said. How do you think? What do you think about that? Somebody says to you, I'm going to joke with you. So the wives were a bit afraid. What is this going to come out now? So far in their experience, not once he has joked with them. He was so serious about everything. So when he said that, I'm going to joke with you, they all waited to hear what is going on. He looked at the children and said to them, none of them look like me, do they? He said. The joke is finished. He said, you can go now. That's it. That's a joke. He said, and he became serious again. So when he said that, none of them look like me, the wives, all the three wives, went back. They were also intelligent people, like the king was. They were also intelligent. So they thought about it. Why did he say like this? Today he's saying, none of them look like me. In other words, is he suspecting about our chastity? These thoughts came to their mind. So they thought, today he is saying like this. But what is he going to say tomorrow? He might say, instead of saying, they don't look like me, he might say, maybe they look like somebody else. If he starts saying that, it gets worse then. So before giving an opportunity to do say anything, all these three wives took their sons and drowned them in the water and killed them. All three of them were killed by the three wives. Parikshit Maharaj was stuck with wonder the way Bharat Maharaj has done that. But so what has happened now? No family continuity now. No king to take over the next position. Bharata was a personality like that. He was so powerful, and such was his powerful control on the people. Now, in this story, you will find one personality, and in the next chapter, you will find another personality totally opposite to this. This is the interesting side in the Srimad Bhagavatam. They have such kings in this lunar dynasty who had their administrative control, and powerful they were such that these two these three wives, they had their children killed, and they thought at least he will not say anything more about it, because they got the fear like this. So there was nobody in the family to continue. It was then that something else happened, that Bharat Maharaj performed a sacrifice, and they got, after the sacrifice, he received a child from the Marudevas. We discussed Marudevas in the, I think in the sixth canto. Marudeva's son. But how that birth was happened? Uthathya in Brihaspati. Brihaspati is the spiritual master of the heavenly planets. His elder brother is Uthathya. Uthathya's wife is Mamata Devi. So when Uthathya was not there, Brihaspati approached Mamata Devi and had a relationship with her. So you can see what the life is in the heavenly planets, what goes on there. It's not much different from this world in many instances. This is all to point out to us that if you are trying to be happy in material world, right from the heavenly planets, all these earthly planets, these are not places where you will find any peace. Everywhere the same thing is going on. The same sense gratification and desire for sense gratification and putting all the efforts for sense gratification. This is what's happening everywhere. So Brihaspati also approached Mamata Devi and he wanted to have a relationship with her. But unfortunately, Mamata Devi was already pregnant from Uthathya, his brother. And the baby was in her belly. The baby was already there. But Brihaspati passed the semen into the womb of Uthathya's wife, Mamata Devi. At that time, Mamata Devi protested to Brihaspati that when she is pregnant, having a relationship like that is not appropriate. Brihaspati would not agree. He wouldn't care. So the result was that the baby who was inside kicked that semen which was sent to the belly by Brihaspati, to the womb by Brihaspati, and the semen fell out. And at the same time, Brihaspati got upset with the baby inside and cursed the baby, who became blind after that. So when the baby came out from inside, he was called a Dirghatamasa, and he was blind as well. But the semen what Brihaspati has passed on to Uthathya, that fell off, and the demigods came and told Brihaspati and Mamata Devi that together you should bring up this baby. They both disagreed. They both won't agree each other. And it was brought up by Marudeva. Because it was owned by these two personalities, Brihaspati and Mamata Devi, she was given the name as Bharadwaja. So this Bharadwaja was handed over to Bharata to be the next member in the dynasty. And that is how he became the member of the lunar dynasty. And from this person, Bharadwaja, it became what is known as in the Shastram as Vidatha Vamsham. Vidatha Vamsham means discontinued dynasty but taken over by Bharadwaj. So he is known as Vidatha. So from now on, it was mentioned as Vidatha Vamsham. Or that vamsham, or that race where this broken line has happened. This was broken by the, because of this Bharat's situation. That, and then you can see there that from now on it is the story of Vidatha Vamsham that is discussed in the next chapter. And when we discuss the next chapter of Vidatha Vamsham, it then comes the story of the Irantideva, which is another interesting personality in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So I'll just read the chapter and the number of verses here. How many sacrifices he performed to play on the banks of the river Ganga and also on the banks of the river Yamuna. This land between Ganga and Yamuna, which is known as Brahmavatam, is the place most suited for performing sacrifices. At one time, if you have wandered around, not today, at one time, if you wandered around the banks of this river Ganga and Yamuna, particularly you will see so many yupams. Yupam means the post, what to which the Savaniya Pashu. Savaniya Pashu means the animal which is sacrificed in this particular sacrifice is tied to. So Savaniya Pashu is tied to the yupam, and the number of sacrifices a king has performed will be known by the number of yupams or these posts which are standing alongside the river bank. So at many, many thousands of years, the great kings, and they used to perform sacrifices, and these yupams used to be present there. So our Bharat Maharaj also perform, because at that particular time, performing sacrifices were the process of spiritual life. And that was the reason why so many sacrifices were performed at that time. Depending on the age, like today, we talk about chanting, isn't it, as our process. Similarly, the process in Tridayugam was sacrifices. The process in Satyugam was performing meditation, dhyanam. And process in Dwaparayugam was performing deity worship.
Krite jadhyayade Vishnu Tridayam yajadomakai Dwapare parijaryayam kalautad harigirtanal.
In Kaliyugam, it is harigirtanam. In Dwaparayugam, it is parijaryayam, means deity worship.
Kridayajadhyayade Vishnu.
In Kridayugam, it is dhyanam or meditation of Vishnu.
Tredayam yajadomakai.
In Tredayugam, it is yajanam or sacrifices. So, accordingly, Bharata also performed so many sacrifices along the banks of this river Ganga as well as Yamuna. And one could see from the number of posts that were standing there, how many sacrifices numbers are mentioned here in the Bhagavadam, that how powerful Bharata was in, and strict he was performing the sacrifices, and he went back to the spiritual world after that. So now, next chapter is the story of Ranthideva, who was born in this Vidatha Vamsham, on this Vidatha race. He was born, and in the story of Ranthideva, I'm going to read that, and then we'll talk about Ranthideva also.
Shri Shuka Uvacham. Shri Shuka Uvacham Vithatasya Sudomanyur Brahakshatro Jayastada Mahavirio Naryo Garga Sankradistu Naralpajam Gurushcha Randidevascha Sankrade Pandu Nandana Randidevasahiyasha Ihamutra Jagiyadim Viyadvitasya Bharadadado Labdham Labdham Bubukshada Nishkin Janasya Dhirasya Sakudambasya Sidada Vidhi Yurashta Jatwari Ashta Jatwari Shadahanya Vivadakila Gridabhayasa Samyavam Toyam Pradarubastidam Krishna Prapta Kudambasya Chutradbhyam Jadave Patho Aditir Brahmana Kale Bhoktukamasya Jagamal Tasmai Samya Bajal Suvannam Adatya Ashradhyanvida Harim Sarvatra Sambashyan Sabhuktva Prayaya Udvijaha Adhanyo Bhokshamanasya Vibhaktasya Mahibade Vibhaktam Vibajal Tasmai Ushalaya Harim Smaran Yadeshu Udretamanyoga Adhidishu Viravrida Rajan Mediyadamanyam Sakanaya Bhubukshadeyam Samadratyavashishtam yel bhumana varaskritam tachadatvanam ashakreshvabhya shubadayet bibhum paniya matram uchesham tachayga paridarpanam parasyadapulkasobhyam adavodehi shuvasyamim atasyadam karunam vajam nisham vibulashramam kripaya brishasandapta idamahamadam vacham na kamayeham gadim ishwaralparam ashtardiyuktam abunarbhavam vam Artim Prabhadhi Akira Dehabajam Andastido Yena Bhavanda Dukaha Chutra Shamogatra Vari Shamascha Dainyam Klama Shoka Vishadamoho Sarve Nurta Krabana Sejandor Jiji Vishor Jivajalar Pananme Idi Prabhashavaniyam Remana Vipasaya Pulkasa Pulkasa Yadada Dhiro Nisargadarinonavam Tasya Tribhuna Adisha Bhalada Bhalamichadam Altmanam Drashayan Chakur Maya Vishnu Nirbidaha Savaide Pionamaskritya Nisango Vigaraspriha Vasudeve Bhagavadi Bhaktya Chakremanaparam Ishuralambanam Chittam Kurvadona Nirathasa Maya Gunamai Rajan Sotnaval Pratyaniyada Talprasanganu Bhavena Randidevanu Vartina Abhavan Yogina Sarve Narayana Parayana Gargachinistido Gargya Chetral Brahmahya Vartada Duridakshayo Mahavirial Tasetrayarunikavi Pushkararuni Rityatra Ebrahmanagadimgada Bhagavatshatrasya Putro Bhul Dastai Yadastina Puram Ajamido Dimidascha, Purumidascha Hastina, Ajamidasya Vamsyam Su Priyametha Dayudvijaha, Ajamida Albrahadishus, Tasya Putro Bharadhanum, Bruhelkaya Stadastasya Putram Asi Jayadradam, Talsudo Vishudastasya Senajil Samajayadam, Vijirashu Dradhanu Kasho Velsachadal Sudam, Vijirashu Sudapada, Prudhusena Sadalpaya, Parasidanayo Nivastasya Putrashadam Tobhul. Sakratyam Shukaganyayam Brahmadattamaji Janal Sayogi Gavibharyayam Vishwaksena Mathal Sudam Yagishav Yobadeshena Yogadandram Chakaraha
Rendideva story and so many things to learn also from Rendideva. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, this one particular story of Rendideva is a very, very attractive story because Rendideva had certain special qualities, some qualities which everyone will like to have. We all like to have that kind of qualities in us. But the problem is, when you start trying to develop these qualities, we fail ourselves. We can't continue further with that. Rendideva was a very, very nice person in the sense that, very nice king, that he could not bear the distress of other people, especially in relationship with hunger and thirst. When he realized that someone is feeling hungry or thirsty, Rendideva will always hand over all his food to them. He will always make sure that he will feed them. So he, because it was like that, that so many people used to visit the palace all the time, and king was feeding them sumptuously as much as he could afford to. Why I'm saying as much as he could afford to means that the treasury money he will not use for that purpose. King had his own palace and properties and wealth of his own. And he always used that money to feed the people, because the other money you can't touch. That is the money belong to the people. It's a treasury's fund. So he will not touch that. Rather, he will use his own wealth, what he had, which he had inherited on his own. That wealth he has always used to feed people. As many, he could not afford, he could not see anyone starving in this world for any reason. So when this was going on, naturally, you can imagine, every day if there is a feast, there will be so many guests also, isn't it? I mean, it's understandable, whether anywhere it is, if you give feast nicely, people will come. That is the nature of the material, in the material world. People like to have a nice prasadam every day. So our king also, Rendideva, was very fond of feeding people like this. But what has happened is, after a while, all the money ran out. King became pauper. He had no money. He is still the king, but the difficulty was that he had no wealth anymore to feed anybody. And still he was lamenting himself that if this is how it is going to be, what am I going to do? How am I going to feed people? This is what was worrying him. So he started fasting. He had no money to eat, you know, buy money to buy anything. Everything is ran out. And the whole family was engaged in this business, including the queen and the children. They were all encouraged to follow the king's footsteps. So after a while, what has happened was that he had nothing to eat. The king could not find anything to eat. He has become so poor. So some people started offering food to him in the reverse direction. The charity started. So the stage has come now that you can see Rendideva's charity gone to such an extent that he himself could not get food all the time. So this went on for some time and he was starving all the time. He had nothing to eat. Many days he won't get any food. Sometimes somebody came to know, they will bring and offer some food to him. This was the situation. So it seems that one day it so happened that by some reason, someone came and offered some nice ghee, some milk, and some preparations made of wheat. This is samyavam, it says there, but doesn't say what exactly the preparations were. Something made of wheat, some preparations were brought and given to the king. So when the king got all these things, felt happy to eat them, and arranged the family to sit together and to eat this food that was supplied to them. The moment they were going to eat the food, there comes a brahmana to visit them. A guest has come, a brahmana guest. And this brahmana has come and told them that he is starving. He had nothing to eat. He has not eaten anything for days together. I need some food right now, Maharaj. Please give me something to eat, he said to Rendideva. Rendideva offered the food to him, whatever that was, after many days of fasting that he has received this food. So Rendideva offers this food to this brahmana guest. Brahmana didn't take the whole food. He ate part of it and left the remaining there, and then he went away. He, brahmana, left satisfied and he left. After some time, when he was preparing himself to eat, there comes a person. There comes someone, a Shudra, I think, with the four dogs. They came in. And he came with the four dogs and told Randideva that we need something to eat. We are starving. So Randideva immediately offered whatever the food that was left to him as well. So they ate happily all that was left. The dogs were fed and the guest also were fed. And they ate all that and they also left. So there, all the food was finished. There was nothing left. All that was left was now a couple of glasses of water that was left over. So Randideva thought that now I'll drink this water and quench my thirst at least, because he was already so weak, he was going to collapse any moment. He hasn't eaten for days together. So he took the water and he was about to drink. By the time he brought it to his lips, suddenly there comes a pulkasa. Pulkasa is one of the Chandala caste or the lower caste of person, says crying that I'm feeling so thirsty, please king, give me some water to drink. This was the voice from this Chandala who came up. Before Randideva could take the water into the mouth, handed over that glass to this guest also. So that was also given to him. He took that and then he also left. Now, what do we learn from this? This Randideva story in the Srimad Bhagavatam has a lot of significance for us for long, long time to come. Main thing is that these three personalities who came, they were Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva. When they came to know that Randideva was trying to advance spiritually through this process of feeding the poor and offering everything to the charity, in other words, they wanted to test his resolve. In other words, how serious he was about it. Sometimes in this world, you can see people fast. And fast for what? You know, this niraharam and all kind of things when they perform. So many things are not, from the scriptural point of view, are not authenticated, but still they'll use it as a tool to obtain their way of the obtain the principles for which they are fighting for. That's quite common. Politicians do that, and so many others also use it as a tool. So they wanted to know whether Randideva had any other motivation, or is he pure enough that out of his good consciousness he is doing that. So that is why Mahavishnu came as that Brahmana. And Brahma came as that Shudra with the four dogs, and it was Lord Shiva who came as the Chandala later. So all the three personalities came in these three forms and tested Randideva about his intentions. That is what was happening. Now, the conclusion is this, that if you try to elevate yourself in spiritual life through any of these qualities, you will have to first, number one, have to face a lot of experiments like this. For example, Randideva was thinking that I'll become, and there is a prayer in that Bhagavatam, two verses, what he spoke to these three, Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva. What was his prayer? Because eventually, when Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva manifested themselves in front of him, they asked him, what is his desire? And his desire he expressed in this way, in two verses it says, you can see there. Desire was that, please give me the ability to enter into all living entities, into their heart as Antaryami. Antaryami means as the super soul. Let me also have that ability to enter into everyone's body, so that any time when someone is in distress due to unable to eat or drink, I can take that distress away from them and relieve them from that distress. This was the boon he asked. Or in other words, he was so sincere in his effort to make it a success. In the Bhagavatam, you will find so many personalities like this. Here it is Rantideva trying through this thing. Later on, you will find in the 10th canto, King Mriga, who was trying through charity, which also failed, and eventually he had to accept the body of a lizard and come and lie in the well, and by Krishna's mercy, he escaped from that also. So, all these different kinds of good qualities, for example, people who are fond of truthfulness, some there are people who will say, I will not tell any lie in my life, decided. No matter what it is, they will always speak the truth. This is number one. Number two, this kind of people who are performing, offering food to others and try to elevate them. The idea of all this is to elevate oneself in their spiritual life. Because all these things do help to advance spiritually. There is no question about that. Why food is offered free to everybody? It helps to advance anadanam, or offering food to others is considered to be a really pious activity. And it elevates the person who offers the food, and elevates those who takes prasadam also get benefited from that. So in other words, these are indirect methods to please Krishna. That by offering charity, by offering the food as to the people, all these things. Similarly, also truthfulness. And Nrga was offering charity of cows to the Brahmanas. The Nrga's charity is so well known that thousands and thousands of cows he was giving in charity every time. If you remember when Krishna was born, Nanda Maharaj, what did he do? Thousands of cows were given in charity. He says Nanda Maharaj had so many cows. Pashudanam, Pashudanam, Pashudanam. That was the whole slogan all the time. Every birthday, Krishna's birthday, thousands of cows were given in charity. And even the birthday which occurs every month when the star appears, that day was also celebrated. Nanda Maharaj thought, let me get an opportunity, I'll utilize it straight away to offer in charity. So Nanda Maharaj was also doing the charity, offering cows in charity to others, to the Brahmanas and the other persons who were charitable, worth accepting charity. So like this you can see, charity is there, offering food is there, truthfulness is there. Like this there are so many things. Austerities and penances, also meant for elevating one in spiritual life. So all these things are there in the Srimad Bhagavatam says, all these things are possible to help one advance in spiritual life. But the difficulty comes now. One thing, one will have to go through severe tests before one can come to some advancement in these processes. That is one of the biggest problem there. That you will not be let out easily, that I have performed so much so I can get away with it. No, that doesn't happen. Often you will find that you will have be subjected to several tests before such a position you can achieve some advancement in spiritual life through these processes. So this brings us to another question. That if it is like that, sometimes in this world, people talk about various lofty ideas in this world. They say that it is nice to develop all these qualities in us. But the practicality in this world also you have to consider. That is another side of it. That you may decide, oh, I will follow this route. It is such a wonderful thing if I give charity, everything. And the nature of this world is such, if you have such a good quality in you, people will abuse you and suck you through that quality and get you into trouble. This is the nature of this world. You can see this. Randideva had such a good heart. He wanted to offer everything. What happened? The very people took advantage of that charitable mind and took everything out of him, and he had to go through this severe situation. This is one important point, because often we, from reading several Vedic literature, we will get very wonderful ideas. What a good idea it is if I can be like this. And for 1 or 2 days we will try, but a third day we fall back again. One of them is, Gobi Bhartrapadakamalayo Dasa Dasa Anudasam. We'll always think, oh, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said like this. If we simply become servant of the servant of the servant of the servant, then how nice it would be. I'll be so humble, Prabhu. Every day I will pay obeisances to all the Vaishnavas in this world and they will accept me. But you have to remember certain things here. When Mahaprabhu has spoken, the people whom he spoke to were Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami and all the great Goswamis. And these Goswamis, like Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, had the culture to understand this principle of Gobi Bhartrapada Kamalayo Dasa Dasa Anudasa. Whereas, if you alone take up this in your heart, and if you wander around with this Pradakamalayo, Dasa, what can I serve you, Prabhu? There will be many people to engage you in the service. So this is the important thing you have to remember, that unless and until everyone is on the same platform, if these kind of principles if you bring and start applying in your life, sometimes you will get into difficulties. Because after a while, you will find you are staying as the Dasa and there will be so many other bosses to tell you what you have to do. This is what will happen. This is the nature of the material world. Randideva's story is telling us this, that if you do not accept something, there are so many things you hear from the book. But many people will read it and understand it. But when it comes to acceptance into one's own life, we all fail in this. This is where the problem is. That there are two things. One is understanding, and the second thing is accepting it. Understanding is easy. In the verses you can quote, and a purport you can give. Srila Prabhupada said this in this translation, this purport, verse number, everything you can say. But when it comes to practice, it becomes a bit difficult. That is why, that in so many instances, this is the kind of situation in life can develop. And therefore, it's necessary to know that when one has this kind of situation, it is better. We all are living in Kali Yugam. We are not living in Satya Yugam. We are living in Kali Yugam. We should remember this all the time. There is no question of such good qualities developing in this world. It is not possible and it is not going to happen either. We can talk about it. Chaitanya Charitamrita verses we can quote. Such wonderful personalities like Goswamis and Mahaprabhu has told us so many nice things about Krishna consciousness and the advantages of cultivating these qualities. But practice and reality of this world will tell you that if you have to take to these things, processes, one day or the other, you will find it difficult to implement in your own life because of the practicalities of this. The material world is such a place, as soon as you take a position like that, the exploitation will begin from then on. But then, what is the answer? That's also another question, isn't it? The answer to that question is also there in the Chaitanya Charitamrita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Throughout Srimad Bhagavatam, you can study the whole Bhagavatam. But there is only one canto which you can go along with in there. All the other cantos are spoken only to understand that this is what spiritual life is all about. That 9th canto, 10th canto, 11th canto, 12th canto, all wonderful cantos. But it is none of these cantos that you can work with. There is only one canto in the whole of Srimad Bhagavatam, and that is the 6th canto. It is in the 6th canto that personality Ajamila, who have told us what is practical in this world. And even today, people who have deep realizations of Srimad Bhagavatam, they will agree with on this one point, that unless and until this nature of Kali Yugam changes, or people are willing to understand that this higher culture of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we all have only one shelter, and that is what Ajamila has told us, to chant the holy name. That is the only process that will work in this world, and that is the only thing that is practical in this world. Everything else is in the Bhagavatam. There is no question about that. When we talk about Madhurya Bhavam, Valsalya Bhavam and all that, they are all very, very nice things. And if one reaches that level of realization, which is very, very hard in this Kali Yuga conditions, all we have to remember is that we travel with Ajamila to the spiritual world. Ajamila is our leader in this topic, in this subject. Nobody else can lead you today because it is Kali Yugam. That is why Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. It is then you will realize the importance of chanting the holy name. So many things you can read in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhishma's prayers, Kunti Devi's prayers, and so many things. But when it comes to engaging ourselves in spiritual life, we will find this difficulty. This is why I'm saying this again and again, that this Randhideva story is pointing out to us that anything, very great ideas or great principles, you may absorb and take it in your life, but practicalities of that comes in there as well. But this one thing, there is no problem. It is no problem at all in practicing it. Chanting Krishna's name and the holy name and Mahamantram, nobody can stop us from doing that. In the all situations, all circumstances, one can still chant Krishna's name and go back with Ajamila. That is why Ajamila is our real spiritual master for this age. Nobody else in the Bhagavatam can take the position. And perhaps that is why when Vedavyasa Maharshi spoke about Ajamila, he felt completely affected by the emotions, seeing the mercy of Krishna, that even after committing such a sinful activity, knowing very well what situation Ajamila was taken back to the spiritual world. And the discussion between Ajamila and Krishna in the spiritual world, when Ajamila asked Krishna that those who are chanting the holy name like me in this world, will they not come back? And that is why Krishna answered to Ajamila that there is no question. If they are chanting my name, they will come back here. This is the guarantee what Krishna has given. So this is precisely the reason why we say that the Yuga Dharmam, Ya Brahma Varunendra Rudra Maruna Stanvandidi Vaistavir Vedir Sangabadir Kramobanishadir Gayandiyam Samagaha Dhyanamastita Tadgadena Manaso Pashyandiyam Yogino Yasyandam Navido Sura Suragana Devaya Tasmai Namam. That Srimad Bhagavatam, when he finishes, remembers Krishna in this way. That Supreme Personality of Godhead, to whom Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and all the other demigods pay their obeisances to him. Ya Brahma Varunendra Rudra Maruda Stvanvandidi Vaistavehi Vedai Sangabadeir Kramobanishadeir Gayandiyam Samagaha. All the Vedic literature, Upanishads, everything, all glorifies that Supreme Personality, Krishna. Dhyana Vastida Dadgadena Manaso. All the great yogis, they are meditating on the form of that Supreme Personality, Krishna. Pashyandiyam yoginam. Yogis are seeing him in their hearts, situated as the Super Soul. Yasyandam navidu sura suragana devaya tasmai namam. To that Supreme Personality, Krishna, I offer my obeisances. That is how Srimad Bhagavatam ends. But before finishing Srimad Bhagavatam, what did they say to each other? Sudha Goswami and Shaunika Rishi and all the other thousands of sages who are present in Naimisharanyam, they have come to this one conclusion. What was that conclusion? Conclusion was this, that that padidaskalido varta chutvava vivasho bhruvan haraye nama ityuchai muchyade sarvabhadagal. That one who has fallen in all conditions, one who has lost all interest in this material life, who has completely bereft of all material possessions, padidaskalido varta chutvava vivasho bruvan, then even if one is in that condition, he has lost all desire for this material way of life and completely given up everything, and he is hopeless situation, even in that condition, Haraye Nama, if he shouts loudly, my respectful obeisances to the Supreme Lord Hari, Ityuchai Muchyade Sarvapadakal, if he loudly chants this holy name of Hari Krishna, he is relieved from all his sinful activities, all his reactions. So you can see from Srimad Bhagavatam what is to be understood. That is only one thing to be understood. That is, this process for this age, Bhagavatam is saying that just chant the Krishna's holy name. There is nothing else to do. And this is the conclusion of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So this Randideva story in this particular instance is telling us that no matter how nicely it is presented, sometimes you have to also accept the reality of adjusting those things in this world. In our practical life day to day, we have so many interactions with the material nature, with the modes of nature. And these interactions, it may not be practical sometimes to maintain those principles to that extent. It is then that this Randideva will remind you that the difficulty of following those processes. He can give you so many examples on these things. Our charity and our good heart, everything. For example, suppose I decided, oh, I won't tell any lie anymore. I will only speak the truth. Up to a certain limit, it is practical to keep it. But sometimes you are pushed by certain situations or circumstances. If you follow that route too far, you will find that you could get into difficulties. And that is the problem with all these processes, that your truthfulness will be finished there at that point. Once, it's also an experience also sometimes, that when we're talking about like this Randideva situation, once there was a feast, some festival, in a big temple it was happening. So everyone was sitting down and prasadam was served. So that is a normal system, that you serve prasadam, everyone sits down and someone comes and serves prasadam to everybody. So when everyone was sitting down, one person, and different preparations were served into the leaf. So everything was served. So one person, they were all hungry, they wanted to eat, and that is why they sat down and they were trying to enjoy the prasadam. So someone in the group thought that no one was serving water. And so he decided to get up and go and bring some water, and he could serve everybody some water. And he had his plate ready there. He was sitting there and he got up. So when he went away and to get the water, somebody else came and sat there. He came and sat there. The person who went to get the water, when he came back, he found that his place is gone. Someone else has sat there taking prasadam. He caught hold of him and told him that get out from here. He said, that is because why? That is the limit he can go to. I have seen this. This is how he can wait up to. You will see this. This prasadam is, one side it is such a nice thing, but on the other side it causes so much problems also everywhere that Peter can tell you about him. Or sleeping now. That how much this prasadam will cause problems. So the thing is that this has happened. By the time he brought water back, this person who was originally supposed to be there, he could not control it. He wanted to have prasadam. Only thing, he will do something good to everybody by bringing the water and distributing water to everybody. That's why he went out. Meanwhile, the place was gone. So he got upset with him and he pulled him out and told him to leave the place. This happened in the temple. It can happen. It can happen anywhere. There's no question about that. This I have seen. I have also seen another thing in a similar situation. When everything was served, everybody sat down and one person got up. He also felt that there was need for bringing something else. It was water or some drink or something. He went out to bring it. By then somebody else sat there. So what did he do? He offered him water also, that person who sat there. Didn't say one word about it. This also I have seen. So these two things you can see in this world. But to get to the second person's mentality, I think many, many lifetimes before it can come to that stage. Before we get to that stage. Because it is not so easy. To get to such kind of tolerance level and patience, everything is very, very difficult in this world. When it comes to our own bodily needs and the desires inside, sometimes it is not so easy to give it up. If it is in case of one prasadam is like this, can you imagine how much the greed is when it matters with thousands of pounds or millions of pounds, whatever is involved, how much the mind will be absorbed in taking over the things. You can only imagine that from this one small incident. The material desires and the needs of this body are such, and the particular age of Kali also will not allow you to have that kind of patience level or tolerance level. And naturally, your so-called the principles will all go in the air in a few minutes. Everything will be finished. There is only one option left. The option is to surrender to Krishna and to chant the holy name. That by Krishna's grace, these qualities can develop in one. Otherwise, it's not going to happen. By our own effort, if we try to develop them, it may not happen to us. There are so many examples given to show that in spiritual life, all these things one has to tread very carefully in life. Otherwise, you can get into difficulties in life also. Like this is not for us, but this is the impersonalists quote this example. But it is also in their own way, it also makes sense, because if you think about it, like for them, the interesting thing is that for them they consider that the soul is one in all the bodies, isn't it? The whole souls in all the bodies is one. That is why they call it monist, they are called, because everything is one for them. So they say that the soul in me, the soul in you, soul in every one of us is one, according to them. So they say that when one has come to that realization and he is fixed up in that, then he has nothing to worry about in this world, because he is seeing the supreme truth in everything as one. He is seeing like that. If he has come to that realization, suddenly he is traveling on the road. An elephant is coming from the opposite side. And this elephant is drunk, as well as it has got its time, you know, when it gets loses its control and starts acting wild and mad that way. The elephant is in that mood, it's coming opposite to him. So he's looking at the elephant, he's thinking, where's the difference? It's the same super soul in me and in him. Why should I worry? After all, we are one, isn't it? He's thinking like that. Will the elephant think about it? Elephant is not thinking. Elephant is thinking, here I got something to play with. He kicks you straight away and you'll be finished then and there. So all your philosophy, it will stay in the bookshelf. It won't help you. So this is the problem, that unless and until this kind of principles and realizations is acceptable and you are dealing with people in that category or in that level of consciousness, it sometimes applying them becomes a bit difficult. And that is why in the Kali Yugam, all other philosophies will not find it easy to work with. It's not practical. That is the difficulty. As I mentioned to you, in the case of eating prasadam, could create so much crisis in one's mind. One is supposed to take prasadam in a peaceful mood, but if he has to go through all this trouble, then if that is not practical, what is the possibility of advancing in spiritual life in this way? You can imagine that. These are some of the lessons from this chapter. Now, Ranjideva's story you have seen. These are all great, great personalities. But if you're talking about this Ranjideva, actually Ranjideva was subjected to this Maya. That is how the Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva played this with Ranjideva. It was not that Ranjideva was actually physically starving. He was exposed into Maya by them, seeing his charitable nature. And that is how they tested him. It was not that Ranjideva had to suffer like this for a very, very, very long time. They were testing his thing. But the story is spoken here for this one reason only, to tell us that if you try any of these kind of things, that none of them will work, because you will fail somewhere, and you will also find that that to elevate yourself in spiritually through these processes are very, very, very troublesome. That is what the story of Ranjideva is telling. Ranjideva also eventually went back to the spiritual world. He is well known in the Srimad Bhagavatam as a great personality. So, now the time is 6 o'clock. So, what I was thinking was, if there is any questions or comments, please say this. And I would like to ask one question then. How many of you are reading Srimad Bhagavatam on a daily basis? Because when you hear Srimad Bhagavatam, it is such an important thing that you should read them regularly. If you don't read Bhagavatam, all these things will be forgotten. For this reason, I also thought that would it be necessary that I should read Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavatam in the class. I was thinking that because you are all reading it at home, there is no need for me to read through the verses, translation and purport. In several instances, Prabhupada has mentioned so many things, and it is not possible to remember everything. But if when you hear these stories from the Bhagavatam, and when you see, read through these purports of Srila Prabhupada, that will give, deepen your understanding of the philosophical aspects of all these great, powerful personalities in the ninth canto and elsewhere also. That it fixes your mind and makes Bhagavatam a lot more easier to follow. And this is the reason I'm asking that how many of you are reading Srimad Bhagavatam? If you could lift your hands. Yeah. So there's not many people who are regularly reading Bhagavatam, it is clear. So my request is that if you would kindly please read Srimad Bhagavatam every day, one or two chapters, or at least if you are attending this class, if you could read those chapters related to to what we discuss here, it will make life a lot easier. Otherwise, we have to read the Srimad Bhagavatam translation purport in the classes. We don't have so much time to go faster. Otherwise, reading through these verses and the commentaries, that will take a lot of our time. So, I do not know how you all feel about it. If you want me to read it, I can read it. But then the question is that if you read it at home, it makes it a lot easier. Then, after this, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, I have left out a lot of things in these two chapters. Reason being that in these chapters, basically, it is father to son, like that. It goes, a number of kings' names mentioned there. So I'll just briefly go through a few of these things, and then we will move on to the next chapter in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Now we are getting closer to Krishna. Why we are getting closer to Krishna? Because it is now in the Bhagavatam that Sukadeva Goswami is trying to close and bringing close to Shantanu. Shantanu means that is that great personality from whom then Vichitravirya, Bhishma, Amba, Ambiga, Ambaliga, and Vedavyasa Maharshi, all their lives are coming in. Which means we are close to the Pandavas and the Kauravas. What is the importance of this Puru? Puru is, in the Puru's dynasty, is these personalities were born, both Kauravas as well as the Pandavas. So they all belong to this Puru's dynasty. So that is important. That is why it was mentioned here. Now the other interesting thing is that also in the Shantanu story, when it comes there, you will notice there the appearance of Kripa, Kripacharya, and Kripi, who was Drona's wife. Their appearance also mentioned. So in other words, Sukadeva Goswami is trying to finish the Luna dynasty and bring us closer to the Pandavas and the Kauravas, so that he can present the appearance of Krishna immediately into the 10th canto. So we have got so far there now. Now the next thing they have to talk about is King Shantanu. Shantanu's life and Shantanu's activity is an important person. And the appearance of Bhishma and all that comes in the next couple of chapters. So before we go there, I'll just mention this dynasty of Puru. What Srila Prabhupada wrote about it. It's a few paragraphs, but we should read that. This chapter describes the history of Puru and his descendant Dushyanta. The son of Puru was Janamejaya, and his son was Prachin One. The sons and grandsons in the line of Prachin One after another, were Pravira, Manushu, Charupada, Sudhyu, Bahugava, Sahyadi, Ahamyadi, and Rudrashwa. Rudrashwa had 10 sons, Riteyu, Kakshayu, Shandilyu, Kritika, Jaleyu, Sannadeyu, Dharmeyu, Satyayu, Vrateyu, and Vaneyu. The son by describing the birth of Bharadwaja and how Maharaj Bharat accepted Bharadwaja as his son. So that is the essence of the chapter 20. And in the next chapter, the chapter 21, the dynasty of Bharata. The 21st chapter describes the dynasty born from Maharaj Bharat, the son of Maharaj Dushyanta, and it also describes the glories of Ranjideva, Ajamida and others. They were seeing the Supreme Personality in every living entity. That is where that compassion has come to Ranjideva, that he could not afford to think that another living entity who is a part and parcel of Krishna had to suffer in this world. Ranjideva was so exalted that he would sometimes give away his own food in Charitpa, and Sharadvan's daughter, known as Kripi, became the wife of Dronacharya. So that is the dynasty of Bharata. So you can see the number of names mentioned there, all in the dynasty of Bharata. And then after that, the next chapter is the descendants of Ajamida. It is in this we come to the story of Dhritarashtra, Duryodhana, Shantanu and all that. So I thought we could, if there's any questions or comments, we can discuss it now. And if not, we can have some kirtan for some time. Yeah. The problem is that what I was trying to say was that these processes can help you to elevate yourself. After all, truthfulness, charity, feeding the poor, all these kinds are meant for advancing in spiritual path. It helps one to advance spiritually. They are pious activities. It improves your spiritual situation. But the practicality of that in this world today is this, that when you want to execute them, you will find the difficulties coming one after the other. That, as I said, that if you take to any of these processes, that people have this nature. Kali Yuga people are not very advanced in many things. They have difficulties in maintaining their body in this world. Because of that, this is precisely the reason Vedavyasa Maharshi said in the beginning itself, Manda sumanda madayo mandabhagya hyubadrudaha, that they are basically not very competent to execute spiritual life because of the different their abilities in doing things. They have problems with their own mind and body and maintaining the body. They are not able to perform austerities like the way people did in Krita Yugam and other timings. So because it is like that, if we try to advance in these processes, the chances are that you will eventually fail. You will not succeed in that. And therefore, that is precisely one of the reasons why this chanting process is given as the authorized process for this age. That this is something which is practical, easy to execute, and practical also for the human society. That once you take to the process of chanting, automatically, because of the chanting the holy name alone, all the other shortcomings in us, in spiritual life, is taken care of. Or in other words, we do not have to be too concerned about our other problems in our capacity to perform spiritual life. In the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, when Srinarada Maharshi was talking to Vedavyas before he wrote Bhagavatam, there is a long discussion there. And what is Kali Yugam is going to happen and how things will be, all these things are mentioned there. And there you will see a statement from Narada Muni about it. Narada Muni says there that Tektva Swadharmam Charanambujam Harer, that if somehow or the other one has taken complete shelter of Krishna without bothering too much about all the other things of this world, Bhajan Abhakveda Padetadho Yadi, that if somehow or the other he has decided to serve Krishna without bothering too much about all the other qualities and formalities of this world. Yatra kava bhadram abhudamushyekim kovartayapto bhajadam sudharmadaha. That Narada Muni points out to Vedavyas that if he does that, even if he falls down from his position at some point in time, he is not a loser. Because Krishna says that it is my duty to look after him. I will look after him. This is what Krishna is saying. So you can see at different instances, this one point coming back in Bhagavatam, that Kaliyugam is full of faults. It's full of faults. And people do not have the capacity and the ability to do many of these things. And therefore the only option they have left is to chant, nothing else. If they chant, then that will elevate them. And to stress that point is why it is mentioned all these different life of these different kings mentioned in the Bhagavatam. It is not that other things don't help, other things do help. But do we have the strength to do it? This is the question. As I was mentioning about prasadam, one time if prasadam is missing, we get upset. And where is our tolerance level? What tolerance do we have? And here, talking about Randideva's case, you see how he was charitable, how he was offering his food to others. How many of us are willing to offer our prasadam to somebody else? It's just the practicality of it. That is why don't worry too much about all the other things. Those things are nice if one can do it, but practically executing them in one's own life is difficult. And that is the reason why this chanting process is stressed so much. Yes. I've mentioned that. Dasa dasanu dasam, what will happen, I told you. If you become dasa dasanu dasa sometime. It's not that it is wrong. It is a good quality if one becomes like that. But if you alone become and everyone else don't become, then you are in trouble. That is what I wanted to tell you. That this is in spiritual life you have to tread very carefully. Otherwise, so many people will quote the words and tell you, this is how it should be, Prabhu. Please do that. But Prabhu won't be doing it. Prabhu will tell everybody, you've become a dasa dasa anu dasa and you will be doing your dasa dasa anu dasa all the time. So you got to be a bit careful in these things. This material world is a very dangerous place. There is a lot of people who will guide you in so many different directions and tell you very, very lofty ideas. Mahaprabhu told the truth. It is a fact that you have to become like that, a dasa dasa anu dasa. But when you become dasa dasa anu dasa, what will happen is that if you are dealing with Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, there is no problem. You can fall at their feet and become dasa dasa anu dasa. But sometimes in this world, we do not find that happening all the time. And that is why we have to be careful when we apply all these principles into our own practical spiritual life, we have to take care. Otherwise, in this world, you have to tread very carefully. Otherwise, you could be into difficulties. And this is the reason why it says there that you chant the holy name, because that you can't, nobody can drive you out of it. It can carry on, your spiritual life can go on still. Yeah. But the qualities, how to achieve those qualities, this is the question. If you take up at your own effort to take that attitude and start doing it, it may end up that you will find some difficulties in that. On the other hand, if you follow the process of chanting the holy name, and due to the potency of chanting, if automatically you become like that, that will be a better situation. Because that is what actually will shelter you. It is the holy name that is protecting us. Mahaprabhu said so many wonderful things for us to follow. It is for us to accept it. But acceptance is not happening. Somebody says, we will tie this Trinaravishuni China on my chest and I'll walk around with that. But if he's not in his life, that same thing happening. Like many of us, we all have the same problem. That we can talk a lot of things, but when it comes to our own life, we are not able to do it. We just are not able to do it. The history shows that all the time. That those people who Mahaprabhu came, he spoke all this great Krishna consciousness, the philosophy, and he guided through the Goswamis through this process. And they wrote all this valuable literature and left behind. But unfortunately, we are not able to live up to that standard often in our own personal life. We try, but often we fail. And when we fail, we start wondering why we have failed. Prabhu, I have been Trinaravishunichana all the time, but what has happened to me sometimes is difficult to why? Because the Mahaprabhu says you chant the holy name. If we don't chant, sometimes we think we don't have to chant, but I'll have this attitude in my life. I'll be Trinaravishunichana, Tararabhi Sahishnana. But that Sahishnana is not good. If we don't chant the holy name, like Mahaprabhu said, then all the other qualities also will not manifest properly in a person. The qualities will only come if everything is preceded by the chanting process. If chanting is not done, like Grantideva was trying to manifest this quality of being charitable to everybody. Similarly, we will tolerate Taroravi Sahishnuna, everything we are willing to tolerate, and everything we'll give. But if you are not chanting, the culture won't build up inside. And that is what one has to be careful about.
It's interesting you say that, actually, because in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, what use is repression?
Yeah,
he talks about that, doesn't it? So it's got to develop by some natural process. Because I know from myself, if you try and, for me anyway, if you try and artificially repress, eventually you just blow your top later. It's really got to come of a, like you said.
Yes, out of that four lines, Mahaprabhu said, the last line is more important than anything else. Kirtaniya Sadahari. That is the way to go to the other three. Because the fourth line is not there, the other three lines won't come out in life. This is the difficulty. And practically, I'm sure that most of us at some point in time in life have experienced this in some way or the other. We will see that these literature are not simple literature. They look simple to us when we read them. But the philosophy behind it and the consciousness that is required to uphold those values require a very high advanced state of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise it is not possible. That is what the practical life shows. That Goswamis, when they associated each other, they all were in the same level of consciousness they had. That they were able to accept it and they were able to live by that. And therefore that principles look very nice when they speak about it. But when we speak about it, and when we have no realization of it in our own life, it looks a little bit embarrassing to people who hear. So that is why in the modern world, sometimes when we present these higher philosophies, we have to carefully talk about it because of the practical difficulties also. This is Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga will show its power. Nobody can stop it. And that is, the power is this, that in everything you will find age of quarrel and hypocrisy, it says there. Why? In the middle of all this quarrel and hypocrisy, we are trying to develop certain very, very good qualities, but the qualities won't take its mature form. Before that, we fail in our own efforts. So, the lesson is this, that unless and until one does all these things, unless and until one takes the chanting process seriously, and if it is not done properly every day, there is no minimum as such. 24 hours is the minimum. That unless and until one does it seriously, these qualities will blow up one day. They will blow up, like Peter is saying, that sometimes he got blown up. So I think I also got blown up. Everybody, every one of us, I'm sure, will get blown up one day. Why? Because that upasana or sadhana, which should be preceding these things, is not there to that extent what is required. It is from that all this strength comes to accept all these things and to translate that into one's own life.
We have explained many times, in order to develop bhakti, we need to develop jnana and vairagya. But somewhere else, I could come across a contradictory statement. So I find it
Scripture is full of contradictions. That is the difficulty. Everything you take, Bhagavad Gita you take, there's contradiction there. Bhagavatam you take, full of contradiction. That is how scriptures are written. This is how it is. And this is the difficulty. That is why I told you before, on one place Krishna says, don't worship the demigods. And on the other place Krishna says, you worship the demigod, they'll give you everything what you need in this world. So what do you do? What's the answer? So that is why I'm saying that the the way Shastra is to be understood through the spiritual master. It is he who brings to you the essence of the Shastra. In other words, depending on the student's position, he has to clarify these things properly. The Shastra is not wrong. Both are right. What Krishna says is right. Krishna says, don't worship the demigods. Krishna says the right thing, because worshipping demigods is for material needs. On the other hand, Krishna says, if you want to live in this world happily, you should worship the demigods. Why? Because the proper way to live is by performing sacrifices and pleasing the demigods. And in return, parasparam bhavayanda prema parama vapsyada, that in mutually you cooperate together, demigods and the human species, cooperate together and they will provide you your material needs also, not exploit the material nature. So in both sense it is correct. When one has come to spiritual path, then there is no question of satisfying his material needs anymore. It is then he is more concerned about going back home, back to spiritual world. It is at that point that you don't worship the demigods anymore, that you move on to worshipping the Supreme Lord, Krishna himself. So you can see, in different instances, Krishna has spoken different things according to our qualification, the student. It is the student that decides what he has to take from this. If he is attached to material life, and if he wants to a comfortable material life in this world, the right method, Krishna says, is to approach the demigods. And by cooperating and performing sacrifices, when they are placed, they will offer you everything what you require. That is that side of it. But if you have come to spiritual life and wants to go back to spiritual world, go back to Krishna, then there is no question of serving the demigods. There is no need for that. Then one should accept and surrender only Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Not even Vishnu. Not even any other form except the two-handed form of Krishna, the Supreme Lord. That's the only thing according to Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. So you can see there is no contradiction. Contradiction comes because we are comparing both, not knowing our own situation. That's where difficulty comes. Now, as far as that was one answer to that question, how Shastram is contradicting in so many places. Adhikari Bhedam. Adhikari Bhedam means according to one's qualification, you stay in the spiritual life in that position. That if you take the highest principles from a very lowest position, lowest consciousness, you will find that you will not be able to sustain there for a very long time. That sooner or later you will find difficulty there because of the consciousness that's required to develop that culture is not there. The consciousness is very much in the lower modes of nature, passion and ignorance. And then you are discussing about the highest transcendental topics, and there you find the difficulty coming in there. That's why everything is adhyayi means qualification, how one qualifies oneself. And in Kali Yuga, the conclusion is that nobody is qualified. This is the most interesting thing. In the Bhagavatam, although all this Jnana Margam, Karma Margam, Bhakti Margam, everything is mentioned, Bhagavatam conclusion is that not one person in Kali Yuga is qualified for spiritual life. And therefore, Krishna has given this special concession just to chant the holy name and become somewhat spiritual. Otherwise, it's not going to happen. The complications are such that as soon as you try to implement any of these things in your own personal life, you see some other problem building up from somewhere. The modern lifestyle doesn't allow you to live an honest life. It will not. Even if you want to, it won't allow you to do that. Nor it will allow you even to, the way the things are controlled by the government, by the society, everything is such that you don't have much freedom. You can just go along with it, what they are doing. That's all you can do. You don't have any option. Even if you want to keep a cow at home, they won't let you do that. You should go and buy it from the Tesco or supermarket. After 4 days it's been milked or packed and chilled and, you know. So this is how much freedom you have. So what's the point in discussing all the great philosophies when you're not having the ability to do that? This is where the difficulty comes. So just saying that this chanting process is the one that will work today. Nothing else will work. Everything else is practically difficult. But to get that stimulation to chant, Bhagavatam can help. Because when you read all these incidents in the Srimad Bhagavatam of these great personalities, it will inspire you that so much they were willing to give up and so much they were willing to sacrifice in their own life to achieve that ultimate goal of life, going back home, back to spiritual world. So, and when we are given a human body in this age of Kali, which is the most glorious age, Kali Yuga, don't think that Kali Yuga is all bad. Kali Yuga is the most the most glorious age of all the four. Why? Because it is only in this age you can go back to spiritual world with such a simple process of chanting the holy name. Whereas in the, it says, therefore many, many great devotees they have glorified Kali. They are thanking Kali for giving an opportunity to take birth in this age. Because in this age, you have this option. Soyam kaleya kalo jaydi murari po yatra sangirtana adyaihi. Through sangirtana process of chanting this holy name, niryatne reva margaihi, that without too much effort, ajiral tulprasadam bhajande, you can please Krishna. That is the advantage of this Kali Yuga. So therefore, this process has been given so much importance compared to anything else in this age of Kali. Jada treda kilada vabihi kilakalau sambhavam kamayande. Kali Yuga, in spite of all these faults, all these problems, people who did not make it to the spiritual world in the Treta Yuga and Krita Yuga, they are praying to Krishna, give me an opportunity to take birth in the age of Kali. They pray to Krishna like this. Why? Sambhavam kamayande devan tatraiva jadan vishaya visharase ma vibho vanjayasman. That once I get a birth in Kali, the only thing I have to take care is I don't get victimized by sense gratification. That's the only thing you have to take care of. Everything else is sufficient if you can just chant the holy name and don't engage in sense gratification. That's all it is asking from us. It's not asking for any deep meditation like in the Krita Yuga or sacrifices in the Treta Yuga, because we just don't have the capacity to do it. We are in such great, such an age that we have come to this world somehow. And somehow we have come here, somehow we have got a human body, somehow we have got these instructions from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Krishna to chant the holy name. And in spite of all that, if we don't utilize it, what should we call ourselves? That everything is so written and clearly and told that this is the process and this is the way to do. And if we still look for other processes, thinking that something else I'll do and make it better, it is not going to happen. Yeah. You should take initiation from the spiritual master. Well, the difference is, every mantra in the Vedic system should be received through from an authority. That is any mantra, it doesn't matter Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, any other mantra also, unless you receive it through a bona fide teacher, it is not considered to be have any potency in it. That is the Krishna system. Krishna has established this system like that. So one should follow that process. And once initiated by the spiritual master means that you have, it is like this, that when we live a life in this world a certain number of years, we understand that we have not accepted spiritual life seriously. We did things which were not in line with the injunction, Krishna's instructions. So at some point in time in life, when you come to realize that, Krishna says that you should take the shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. And when you take the shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, what you are actually doing is that you are declaring to Krishna, but to the spiritual master, instead of declaring to Krishna, you're declaring to his representative, telling him that I have accepted the principles what Krishna has given to me, I've accepted them in my life, and I commit myself to accept that throughout my life. This is that commitment you are making. And that should be done in front of a person who is qualified. That is why it's done in front of a devotee or a guru or spiritual master. It's done because of this reason. Somebody who is qualified. Not that anyone and everyone could do that. Someone who is qualified, someone who has got that strength or spiritual strength in himself, who can accept a personality and engage him in the service of Krishna. So that is why that process is created like that. There is no question that it should be done at some time or the other in one's life. One should accept a spiritual master. Yes, chanting, whether you are initiated, non-initiated, no matter what it is, whatever situation is, whatever you are chanting, the holy name has its power. It will purify one, no question about that. But the right process is as you have mentioned, is that you accept a mantra from somebody and then chant the mantra from then on. That is the bona fide way of doing it, or authorized way. But that doesn't mean that if you chant, even if you are not initiated, it is all in waste. No, it's never wasted. Whatever, once you have spoken, there is a beautiful statement. If you perform 1,000 Ashwamedha sacrifices, there is some result from that. Ashwamedha sacrifices are mentioned in the, I can't remember that verse. It says there that the difference between Ashwamedha sacrifice and chanting the holy name of Krishna is this. The person who performs Ashwamedha sacrifices, he has to take birth again. Only thing is, he may take birth in heavenly planets. But once you have chanted the holy name of Krishna, Krishna pranamina punarbhavaya, if you have paid your obeisances to Krishna once, it says, you don't come back to this material world again. Then you may ask, oh, so many times I have paid my obeisances to Krishna. Why I am here still, isn't it? That question comes. The reason is this, that when you say offering obeisances to Krishna means, this obeisances is not just physically the body lying flat on the floor. It's more than that. That there need a consciousness that after, if you have paid a proper obeisances to Krishna and you have got up from front of the deity, there is a kind of happiness that has to come from that. That one, you got another opportunity to pay obeisances to the Supreme Lord in this lifetime. And that satisfaction and the realization from that, that's what makes an obeisances proper. So that takes time, the proper obeisances to happen. Most of us, we just come and do it as a routine thing and we come out. How many of us are really in our heart surrendered to that extent to pay obeisances to Krishna properly? Many people find it even difficult to pay obeisances because they think if I put my head down, oh, it's a surrendering to somebody, it's not a very good thing for my prestige. There are many people, they just look at the deity and they walk away. But at least having come to the understanding that it's our duty to pay our obeisances to Krishna, one Prabhupada used to say that in the beginning, people ask this question to Prabhupada also, how important it is to Prabhupada. We don't understand. And Prabhupada was saying, don't worry, don't understand, don't worry about it. Just do it, he said. Why? Because that's the only way you can understand it. You do it, and then it will see what happens then, he said. So the meaning is this, that this things like this, related to surrendering to Krishna, all this is a part of that process. And if you continuously do it, in one time you will see how it changes your own mind, consciousness. That pride, that arrogance, that ego, everything, we all have plenty inside. That will all slowly wipe out. And then we'll realize our relationship with Krishna is that He is the master, we are the servant.
Isn't the same power also there?
No. Chanting has got the greatest potency in Kali Yuga. No other time. In Kali Yuga, because it is the process that recommended for this age, if we don't take to it, we miss the boat. That's it. It is in the Bhagavadam from beginning to end. This is where it is. That in this age of Kali, that is why Bhagavadam was spoken. Why was Bhagavadam spoken? Bhagavadam was spoken for only one reason, to give this understanding to people to chant the holy name. Bhagavadam and the holy name are together. You cannot separate it out. You see, why Mahaprabhu gave this Bhagavadam so important? Why Veda Vyasa Maharshi divided the Vedas into four? Why he commented on the Brahma Sutram in the form of Bhagavadam? Is only one thing it comes to, that is to chant the holy name. If we don't chant and come thinking about the other ages are probably better time to come back and live in the other ages, all these plans won't work. The right thing to do is, today we have this human body. Today we have the capacity to chant. And today we have devotees who tell us to chant, to take advantage of this holy name. Srila Prabhupada gave us this holy name, took so much energy himself and sacrificed so much, so that the result is that millions of people in this world are able to chant the holy name. Isn't it? So you can see from this, the power of holy name is such that there is nothing that can stop it. The holy name will continue. Those who want to take advantage of it, they can take advantage and they can leave this world with the holy name on the tongue. That is the benefit from that. If you don't, you can discuss all the books you can read. There are so many books coming out day after day. Devotees are writing, everybody is writing. But all these books, if you read at the end, if you are not chanting, what good is there? What's the use of all these books? I produced so many books, so many literature I have written. But at the end of the day, if you're not chanting the holy name, which is on which all these things are based on, there is nothing going to happen. We may have to go through and come back again and continue with another lifetime. So the conclusion is this, that Srimad Bhagavatam from very beginning to end tells us one thing: chant the holy name, chant the holy name, chant the holy name. And if you keep doing it whole lifetime, you are guaranteed, Mahaprabhu says, and other authorities on the holy name also says, that you can go back to the spiritual world, because nothing else you can do here. When I mentioned this before, Brahma got it in writing from Krishna. Yes, that is a verse in the I think it is in the second canto, when Brahma was, when asked to do the creation, when he refused, he said to Krishna that I am not going to continue the creation. And then Krishna asked him, what is the problem? Brahma said to Krishna that they are all giving me trouble afterwards. They are all telling me that that you have created us and we are put into this situation, and they don't know what to do because they are all suffering according to their own karma in this world. Karma is that is binding us in this world, in different bodies, in different places, and going through different experiences, happiness and distress. Behind everything is karma there. And then they don't know how to get out of it, and they are blaming me, he said to Krishna. Brahma says to Krishna. Krishna says, what do you want then? What do you want to do about it? So Brahma said, unless you make some concessions, nothing can be done, he says. Yeah? Unless you make, and that concession, what Krishna has given is this chanting of the holy name. That Brahma said to Krishna that you have so many names, Govinda, Madhava, Damodara, and millions of other names Krishna has got, depending on the pastimes he has performed or given by somebody else in relationship with Yashodamai or Nanda Maharaj or someone like that. But whatever it is, the question from Nanda Maharaj, the Brahma was that at the time of leaving the body, Yasyavatara gunakarma vidambanani namani asuvigame vivasha grinandi. Asuvigame means at the time of leaving the body. If somehow or the other, if a person is able to chant one of your so many millions of names, Yasyavatara gunakarma vidambanani, according to your gunam, according to your qualities, according to your karma, different things specifies different names for Krishna, isn't it? No, through Bhagavatam you can see, Yasya avatara guna karma vidam banani namani, all these names, asuvigame vivasha grinandi, that at the time of leaving the body, when the spirit soul leaves the body, if he is able to chant any one of these names, teneiva janma shamalam sahasaiva hitva samyandi apavardamadam tamajam prabadhyem. That Brahma got it in writing. Krishna said, I have signed the document. You can go and tell them that. And that is how Brahma started this day again. His next day started. So if you have to remember one of Krishna's names at the time of leaving the body, it won't happen automatically, would it? Unless we practice it today. Today when you are healthy and when you are in good consciousness, when your mind is strong, you have to do it today. Then the name will come at the time of leaving the body. Otherwise it won't develop like that. We are not like Ajamila. Ajamila thought, I will start at 88. So if you keep it for 88, you may not be there till 88, first of all. Today, when we are in healthy condition, our mind and body, we have to practice this. If we do that, it will come. It will show its power. The holy name will show its potency at the time of leaving the body. That is the guarantee Krishna has given, Brahma has given, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given, everybody has given. And that is the message for this age from the authorities. Yeah, it's a good question. The spiritual master comes to life at a time when the desire also gets very strong to find the spiritual master. And also it's Krishna's mercy. These things happens in life. But that is not the whole crisis today. Crisis today is that First, we have to develop this process of chanting seriously. And when one chants seriously, if one feels the one has developed sufficient faith in another, in a spiritual master, he should get initiated. But if the faith is not strong enough, he hasn't got that faith to pursue that path, then he should wait till he finds it. After all, our life is controlled by Krishna. And by Krishna's mercy, everything happens in spiritual life. But whether I have a spiritual master or no spiritual master, Shastra says that your duty is to chant the holy name. And unless you chant, even if you have a spiritual master, there is no guarantee that you will get back to the spiritual world. That's also another important thing. That you may say that, oh, I got spiritual master. He's a very powerful personality, Prabhu. He knows everything and he is already with Krishna all the time, so I don't have to worry. No, it doesn't work like that. You have to put your... Krishna, spiritual master is only showing you that route, which way to go. But the taking the route upon yourself, the responsibility is there, which is to chant the holy name. And when that becomes... progresses comes strongly, at some point in time, by Krishna's arrangement, things will happen also in life. After all, spiritual master is the only one thing that is not... it's always a difficult question to find a spiritual master and to surrender unto him, as Bhagavad Gita says. Even if I answer that question, it's not going to happen, is it? So, I can answer it, but the question is that, will everyone take to it? This is the question. You have to keep reminding this all the time. It's necessary in life. Because otherwise, our nature is to fall into tamogunam easily. And tamogunam means that not giving the importance to the holy name. There is nothing in this world to do, strictly speaking, except to chant Hare Krishna. That's the only thing we have to do. Everything else is secondary. And we give so much importance to so many other things. So, slowly it starts slipping. First it becomes 4 rounds in the morning, 10 rounds in the afternoon, 4 before going to bed, walking up and down, finishing. All these things becomes later. Why? Because it's not a priority anymore. You have lost that momentum or the faith in the potency of the holy name. But when one takes it seriously, there is no question about it that one should chant in the morning all the minimum what he has committed, and he can chant the extra when he can, as much as time allows him to do. But naturally, morning hours are meant for spiritual life, and if one does not utilize it, chanting in the evening, late in the evenings and all, especially the minimum rounds, it's not going to have the necessary influence on one's consciousness. It is purified better when one does it in the morning. That is why morning chanting is... In the older times, if you also look that in many, many big, big temples, when the Brahminical culture was very strong, they used to come to the temple something like 2:30 or 2:30 to 3 o'clock in the morning. That's when they arrive at the temple, after bathing in the tank or river or lake or wherever it is. And from 3 o'clock right up to 9 in the morning, they have their spiritual activities. Why? Because that is the time when the spiritually you are more alert, free from the lower modes of nature. After that, after 9, 10 o'clock, then you do all the other business in this world, what you have to do. But these hours in the morning are so precious that if you do not wake up in the morning and chant Hare Krishna, you can take it, that day's effort is all wasted. It's just gone. So that's why this waking up in the morning and chanting Hare Krishna is our main business, nothing else. As long as it is done, that particular day is valuable. It's spent properly. And Srila Prabhupada was so strict about it. By his own life, he showed that morning hours for spiritual life, nothing else. And that's the time to chant. And afterwards, he should chant, not that he should not. But at least the minimum rounds what one has committed should chant in the morning. But nowhere it says that you should only chant 16. Eh? Nowhere it says that. You can chant more. Nobody has put any restrictions on that. At least it's one thing. So it should be ideally all the time, but at least morning hours, seriously.
What time does the start from the movement?
Yeah. Brahma Muhurtam. It's very difficult to calculate here, Brahma Muhurtam. Because if you take Brahma Muhurtam here, in winter, when the sun rises, something like 9 o'clock in the morning, that means you could sleep somewhere around... Actually, it is related to the rise of the sun. 7.5 nariga, it says, which is 2.5 nariga is an hour. So, it's about 3 hours, roughly, you can say, prior to the sunrise. But the way it is done, because of these differences in the timings of sunrise and sunset and all that, what is normally done is they take somewhere around 6 o'clock and 3 hours before. So these times have been set up, that 4:30 Mangalarati, on this understanding that you wake up around 3 or 3:30 latest and continue your spiritual life from then on. So you have 3 hours easily in the morning before the sun rises. Everything is not dependent on the... It's not so particular that Brahma Muhurtam according to hour and minute that you have to follow. What's important is the morning hours you spend in spiritual life. That's the most important thing.
In Bhagavatam,
they're
like the two necessities.
Yes.
With our spiritual life and our path. It seems to me, it sort of makes sense. It's like in two ways we're associating with the Lord, through His names and through His pastimes.
Yes.
But what occurs to me is when somebody says, oh, only by chanting, I can't see it because we can't get to know the Lord, it seems, unless we read about His pastimes. So it seems to make sense. It's like associating with Him as well, in His pastimes.
Yes, yes.
So in that way, it will be an imbalance.
The pastimes of Krishna are relished by devotees. When the devotees read the pastimes of Krishna, they relish Him. And what does that mean? Relish means it brings you the memories of Krishna strongly. If you remember Krishna very seriously in life, what does it mean? It means that you would like to call Krishna, and that is what is chanting means, isn't it? What does chanting mean? Chanting means to calling the name of Krishna all the time. That is what is chanting, isn't it? So in order to call Krishna all the time, you have to have some stimulation inside, and that stimulation is the pastimes of Krishna. So Bhagavatam, in one way or the other, will inspire the devotee to take to this process of chanting seriously. That is the advantage of studying Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam will fix his mind in the chanting process seriously. That benefit you won't get anywhere else. Otherwise, if you give up Bhagavatam and if you simply think that, oh, I will chant all the time, because our conditioned mind under the lower modes of nature will not give you that stimulation. Whereas the conclusion of all the great devotees who have mastered Srimad Bhagavatam is this, that at the end they were able to chant Hare Krishna. This is what they learned from that. That by studying Srimad Bhagavatam, they got that motivation to chant Hare Krishna. So in order to do chanting, in order to chant Hare Krishna, we need the support of Srimad Bhagavatam. That is where Bhagavatam comes in. The conclusion of Bhagavatam has not changed. It is to chant Hare Krishna, nothing else.
Now all the request is you to ask people how many people are taking it seriously.
I'm sure all the initiated devotees are definitely chanting their rounds. I know, Mr. Kapoor. Where are we? That's why we started this program at 3. If anyone can come, it will be the more than welcome to join us to chant. But otherwise, all I can say is that we should chant. That's the whole, this whole process, the whole movement, the all effort of Srila Prabhupada is all only to do this. And if we don't do that, then everything, we can hear Srimad Bhagavatam whole life, but if the motivation is not there to chant, that then either the speaker has got some problem or the listener has some problem. Somewhere there is some problem. So speaker is not doing his job right, or the listener is not taking it seriously. That's all. But chanting must go on. Chanting is there is no other shelter, as it says again and again. There is no shelter in this world. People are, today you see some people, tomorrow they are gone from this world. We are seeing it every day. And time is so limited in this world. We haven't got a lot of time. And to think that, oh, I will do everything when I retire from my life, and when I get my pension, I will one day retire, and or after my... once you get your pension, once you retire, then you are making the next plan for enjoying the retirement age. So where is the end to this? When is this going to come to an end? When we will realize that this body, Krishna is saying in the Bhagavatam again and again, this thing, human body, Krishna says, is such a rare thing that I've given that to you and still you have not taken it. What should I call you, he says there. He says, what should I tell you? Because I've given you this opportunity. Bahu sambhavande manushyam arthadam anityam apihadiraha. That the human body's nature, Krishna is saying, first of all, manushyam, manushya body, human body. Arthadam, if you utilize it properly, it can get something, some benefit from this body. After all, 60, 70 years will go very soon. And then when you leave this, so many people are leaving this world, we'll also live like them. There won't be much different. Manushyam arthadam. And then next word Krishna used is to remind us, anityam. It is temporary. Krishna says, it's not you have something permanent in your hand. You've got something very temporary. Anityam api hadhiraha. That if you utilize it and succeed it, you are a dhira. Krishna says, you are a courageous person. Because you did what I've asked you to do. That's what Krishna feels satisfaction there. Turnam patet yade anumurtiyaval nishreyasaya vishayakhalu sarvatasyal. Krishna says that one day you will be wandering around in this world. Sometimes have you seen in the newspaper, somebody fell down, dropped dead there. It will be like that. That's how this body is. Turnam patet. One day it will drop off on its own. You don't have to put any special effort for that. It's already decided and written and kept it in the record when you should drop off. Today you are thinking, I'm walking around with my chest high, feeling very proud about my health and wealth. But that nothing will stay. If you do like that, Krishna says, you have got the Shreyas. Shreyas is this, that Vishaya Khalu Sarvada Syal. That this attachment for sense enjoyment has to come to an end. Then you can chant properly. As long as you are attached to sense enjoyment, and then you are executing spiritual life, these two things won't go together. That is why, hold on to the sense enjoyment, stop that, and continue with this simple spiritual activity of chanting the holy name. When that is done, Krishna says, you have used the life I have given you properly. Otherwise, he says, Shukha Rajaval. Uddhava says, Shwava is dog, Dharam, and Ajam, goat, and the donkey. He says, that's a life. There's nothing more than that you gain from this. That is their conclusion. To Uddhava was asking this to Krishna, and Krishna's answer was like this: you have not gained anything from that life, he says. So what can you say? So if you accept Krishna's position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who gave this understanding in the Bhagavatam, Bhagavatam is full of these instructions to devotees to take to this process of chanting seriously and to take advantage before the body starts withering away, before the mind starts going away. Because I see now, as you get older, 50, 55, you can see, can't remember what somebody said in the morning. Can't remember where I left the key. Can't remember how I locked the house when it came out. All these things are showing its symptoms. So when one is young, Krishna says that you should utilize it before the only few years you have in life, strictly speaking. You haven't got much time. Whole balasthaval, krida sakta, whole childhood was busy in playing and gone with that. Tarunasthaval, taruni sakta, the youth was chasing girls, that was the business. Vriddhasthaval, chinda sakta, at the old age, what are you doing? Thinking about all what I have done in my previous years in my life. Pare brahmani kopina sakta, nobody has any interest in the in realizing the truth. This is how the Acharyas talks about it. That is why opportunity is there. If one utilizes it properly, he has got an opportunity to come back to spiritual world. If he misses it, you have missed the boat. Come back again, Krishna says, accept another body, start the whole process again from another womb. Getting up, coming out crying, beaten all the time, can't say anything, what was going on in your mind, because you can't speak anything. And then the mother will beat you, father will beat you, uncles will beat you, aunts will beat you, everyone wants to get on heavy with you because you are not complying with what they want you to do. And then in the end, when you grow up, then you have to go through this such a wonderful school system of education for 20 years. Then you have to get a job, earn the money, and pay the bills. All these kind of things, you continue again. That's if you get a human body again. So this is our reality in this world. So that is why Srimad Bhagavatam you will find in some places. Why Sukadeva Goswami is glorifying renunciation so much? For this reason only. Get detached from this attachment to the material world and become serious about spiritual life. In order just to create this detachment, Sri Shukan is again and again making a joke of all people, of those who are too attached to the material world. You see, from the second canto he begins that, which you'll see. Yeah. Yes, if everybody the 15 minutes is not a lot, but we could probably do that between 3 and 4 if you could all come, because we have got they have other programs now right after this class, and they will start coming in. And yeah, if you have so much time, there is no problem. But do we have time? That's the question. That we can do more things. If you can come Saturday and Sunday whole day, we can sit on Chan whole day. But you have to do other things. I don't know how much everyone will be enthused to do that. So all we can do, they can take the beads and start chanting when they get home. Every morning they can chant and chant the holy name again and again and get used to it. And if they find difficulty, please come on Sunday, 3 o'clock, and we can all chant together. Okay, I'll stop there. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.